this Straight Talk Live chat.
The conference is in lecture mode.
I do have to admit that I'm feeling a little apprehension. It's odd sitting in my office and looking at my monitor as I speak to all of you. So I'm visualizing you out there across the country, those of you who are interested in developing professional development that truly does follow an evaluation process that assists us with the true evaluation, which is how are our students benefiting from the professional development we offer teachers. I have been involved in professional development for several years now and written several teacher curricula for both in-service and pre-service, and have learned a lot along the way that I hope I can share with you today to assist you with the evaluation and also the planning of your professional development. I am a national Language Essentials for Teachers of Reading and Spelling trainer. That is the letters curriculum that Louisa Motes has written, and have also written a couple of the modules under the letters name, Foundations, An Introduction to Language and Literacy, and also the Para-Reading Guide for Paraprofessionals. I am also the Vice President of Professional Development with Step-by-Step Learning and oversee the work they do, the fine work they do with many schools in Pennsylvania and other states. So let's get started. You have the PowerPoint handout hopefully with you, and let's move to slide 2. The goals for our next few minutes together are that I will hopefully provide a new insight for you into the process of how we can more effectively evaluate our professional development. Also, to help you understand elements of ongoing successful professional development, which really requires a new consideration of what professional development is in this day and age and what it can be, and helping our teachers understand this new way of viewing professional development as well. And then hopefully after today, you will have some new information to help you plan your professional development and its improvement. Here is a little cartoon that, upon first looking at it, looks rather silly, but actually this cartoon helps to demonstrate what valuable professional development would be, and that is professional development that is truly related to the work that we do. Many of our memories of professional development may be somewhat removed from the roles of ourselves as teachers in a classroom. The history of professional development, there is some good and there is some bad and there is some ugly. And we're moving toward good professional development, of course. But there is a history. Some of us, we probably did basket weaving or kayaking to get those professional development credits that we needed to maintain our certification, somewhat unrelated to the classroom. So there is that unfortunate history, and unfortunately that's given professional development an unfortunate reputation as something to get out of the way, or professional development that we needed to complete to contractual obligations. Unfortunately, many times had very little impact on day-to-day responsibilities. Faddish and impractical professional development that had no basis in proven fact. So I think most of us who are tuning in today do realize that the professional development we plan is going to be more successful if it does have its basis in and clearly and transparent for teachers in supporting the work they do in classrooms. Moving to slide 5. Thomas Guskey is a researcher and author upon whose work I have developed this PowerPoint today, along with my experiences. His book, Evaluating Professional Development, is one that helps us see more clearly how to evaluate the professional development that we offer teachers. One note of his notes is that in the research literature, even though we have a history of some poorly developed and produced professional development, notable improvements in education did not take place in the absence of professional development. Side six. So I ask you to consider the professional development that you are offering now. Is your training based on the most current findings, and how do you know? Does it provide attention to needs that have been determined ahead of time, similar to planning our instruction for our students based on data? Are we planning our professional development based on data? What are the areas that would benefit our teachers based on their needs and our students? Does it provide more than a one-stop professional development, everyone come and then go your way and good luck? Does it provide support once those teachers have received the training? Slide seven. Professional development, does it have its basis in research? I ask, I get this question many times from superintendents, professional development planners in school districts, and I ask them to check the training references. Are the citations from researchers and journals that you recognize that publish peer-reviewed findings? Ask the presenter upon what body of research is the training asked. Even simply asking them, to what extent do you base your training content upon the National Reading Panel and the National Institute's findings, can give you a lot of information about the content then that will be presented to your teachers. And do ask for references. Slide eight. When you are asking the question, does my professional development provide for the needs that my teachers have, the first place we look is your student data. What are those basic skills? How are they progressing? And can give you some information about what our teachers need, where they need to be focused, and then providing support for them to teach in those areas. Is there an evaluation process? This is slide nine. Is there more than meets the eye? Is there more to the teacher showing up, taking their notes, and leaving? And this will now is the introductory slide to the evaluation process that Thomas Guskey outlines in his book. How are the teachers held accountable for their knowledge, and then what support is given to teachers to assist them? Slide 10, evaluation is the key, and when we are evaluating our professional development, we can have a basis upon which to improve the training that we bring into our schools on an ongoing basis. So slide 11 shows the five levels of evaluation. I do have a handout that that presents these five evaluations with suggestions for ways to implement these, and I will post that to the Institute site following this session today. So we're going to look at the five levels, and the first one, participants' reactions, is pretty general. This is where we usually start, and this is where we usually end. But the other four bullet points here show you that we can go deeper with, of course, the last one being the most critical outcome, how are our students learning? So let's start with the first one. What are the participant reactions? We probably all have evaluation forms that ask, did you like the presenter? What's the accommodations? You know, and when we get information on whether the room was too cold and the donuts were stale, and we tend to discard this, but this information is important. What I'm suggesting here is that we just don't stop with this information. We all know that the adult learner needs to be comfortable to learn. Children need to be comfortable. We have to have these needs taken care of. But use this information to improve the program design and delivery. And then move to the next level, which is the participant learning. We can measure the teacher learning. It's not common, but it is important. Accountability is critical, and when participants know that their learning will be assessed in some way, We know that there is a more of an investment in time and energy. So we want to know, are there changes in knowledge and skill level? And in some cases, we may be working with change along the areas of beliefs and attitudes. But we will use this information to improve, once again, the program content, format, and delivery. And being reminded that only people who die very young learn all they really need to know in kindergarten, that especially for teachers, it is such an ongoing challenge to become masters at the work we do, and that requires ongoing learning. One of the beauties of teaching, this is slide 15, is that there is no limit to one's growth as a teacher, just as there is no knowing beforehand how much your students can learn. And it's nice to be reminded of this. So to assess teacher knowledge, it can happen in several ways. One example is to build in a review process. You will find this in the curriculum I wrote, the Letters Curriculum Foundations in the Language and Literacy. Build it in to the professional development. Do it frequently and assist teachers to personalize it. So rather than a multiple choice test, this is what I learned, this evaluation can help teachers take this, build a plan for recording their new knowledge and how they're going to use it. I call it a take-two review. It's basically the two-column notes, which I'm sure is familiar to all of us. And you can provide the knowledge piece on the left side if you want to, and then have the teachers fill in the application side, which is, with this new knowledge, this is what how my teaching will change. This is what I'm going to do in my classroom now with this new knowledge. This little piece here has become very, very valuable in the professional development I have been doing, and teachers leave with a clear, itemized application process for their new knowledge. Of course, once it gets back into the classroom, there is the additional support that can be supportive, which is their colleagues or a literacy coach who can help them remember, this is my new knowledge and how I'm going to apply it. There is a photograph in the PowerPoint that I sent you that shows an idea for you if you'd like to do something like this. These are posters that are on the wall during professional development with the knowledge pieces itemized. And then as we go through the material, teachers take turns and record through group discussions what I will do with this information now in the classroom. So this becomes a collection over the professional development time of the learning, and teachers are constantly reminded of it. Slide 18 shows another evaluation process. You can put whatever questions you would like in here, but once again, the goal being helping teachers identify what their learning is and how their teaching will change. So these are just four questions that I have used that have helped teachers process the information as they as I present it. Slide 19 is one that I have used very occasionally. This can be a little confrontive, but when you have a group of participants that is not invested, they're at the very beginning stages of change, may be angry, just reminding themselves to rate themselves as a learner, how am I going to participate in the training today? You might get some non-learners, of course, but this takes Bloom's taxonomy and helps them understand that just as you are students in this professional development, we have students in our classroom, and how can we assist each other when learning. Slide 20 demonstrates a graphic organizer of how change happens, which is reflective of the both the teacher-learner and the student-learner. It is built from Michael Fullan's change cycle that helps us understand changing beliefs and belief systems does not start with changing the belief system. And in schools, many times it begins with the professional development and material change. Once materials are in place and teachers receive professional development on how to effectively use those materials, then the application of the materials in the classroom with teacher success, student success, we begin to see a little bit more of a buy-in to the change. Then professional development that assists with the improved implementation of the materials and tools with greater student success leads to even a greater change in the system. So this cycle that you're looking at here on slide 20, begins with the professional development, which creates a change in classroom practice. And, of course, make some notes right there that that change in classroom practice is not going to happen with support. Leadership support and what Margie Gillis at the Haskins Laboratory has discovered, that the reading coach and that literacy coach play such a vital role with assisting teachers with that change in classroom practice, comes change in student learning. And when the change in student learning is improving, increasing, teachers are getting that payback that we all and they all strive for, then that change in teacher attitude and belief can happen. And then professional development becomes ongoing. Every time those notes are reviewed from the workshop, every time a professional journal is picked up and read, every time we meet with our colleagues with whom we attended that professional development and discuss the content, all of that is assisting then that change in classroom practice, and the cycle continues. Slide 21. Practices that are new and unfamiliar are more likely to be accepted and retained when they are perceived as assisting me, when my competence improves, when my effectiveness improves. And of course, the way we know that as teachers is when our students' skills are increasing, when we see an improvement in their reading skills. This little maze is one I use occasionally to just to emphasize that we can have everything well in place. Our plan of action is there. We know what we're going to do. We get back into our classrooms after that fabulous professional development. And even though we can see our way clearly through that maze of teaching, there are distractors. A new student may come in, and that pulls me off of my pathway to implementing my new learning. And then we go on vacation, or the kids go on vacation, they come back, and then I'm tired and I'm sick and I forgot what I'm supposed to do, and man, the old way was easier. And we fall back into our old routines, and then burnout, of course, is a big one in our field. So where is that support that can assist teachers to bring them back to that pathway through this maze? That is a huge piece of the evaluation process. The next slide, slide 23. So ongoing professional development training plus. So this slide outlines many of the considerations now that anything all of us can do to assist teachers to understand that professional development is a part of our career that happens every time we involve ourselves in any of these activities. This is working toward our improvement in our improving our skills. I sometimes tell teachers and ask them, do you know which profession has the highest rate of subscription to the professional journals and materials? Most of you are probably thinking doctors. That's generally an answer that happens. But the profession that is most tuned in through their journals to inform their work are hairdressers. And hairdressers are very dependent upon the staying current. Their livelihood depends upon it, and ours as educators does too. Slide 24, organization, support, and change is the next level of evaluation. We do want to know what is the school's advocacy for change, for assisting teachers. What is their accommodation, and what do they offer for teachers to help them stay current? was the training facilitated and supported, and were sufficient resources available? Many of us have attended professional developments or held professional developments and been very aware of what little support there is, and that's very obvious to teachers and educators when they attend these. Is there administration present? Did they put us down in deep in the basement where it's real cold, and were we well taken care of? Is there support that's just visibly in the advocating this professional development? You know, were the materials there? So we want to document and improve the organizational support through this. This next cartoon, number 25 here, this reflects for many attendees to professional development the outcome when it's obvious that the professional development is not supported by leadership. You know, let's just skip these professional developments and let's just, you know, it's not doing us any good anyway. So this is what we want to avoid, and all of these steps of evaluation can help with that. But that leadership support goes a long way. So many of the messages that are sent, slide 26, during professional development, the attendees are noticing these, and some of them are very overt messages, but nonetheless noticed and taken seriously by teachers. Okay, slide 27. Here is the evaluation piece that is ignored or overlooked or not even considered. This is the bingo. When we assess or, evaluate in some way how the participants are using the new skills, the new knowledge that they have learned in professional development, we get the more valuable feedback on the success of the professional development. I know after I train teachers, I can be so uplifted because the teachers were so energetic and so thankful and taking notes and are expressing their gratitude and just can hardly wait to get back to their classrooms. And I tend to think, okay, I've done my job, it's over now, but it's not. It's really just begun. The true evaluation is now what's happened once those teachers get back to the classroom. Slide 28, another quote. They always say time changes things, but you actually have to change them yourself. This is in regards to if we're going to change what's happening out there, we all need to be involved in this and what is happening in the classroom after we do our fabulous training. The next slide, change is the end result of all true learning. I tell teachers if I have some new knowledge, and it's important to me, something is going to change in my behavior. I tell them I learned that dark chocolate is really good for the heart. With that knowledge, how will my behavior change? Well, I'm going to eat dark chocolate, and not only am I going to eat it, I'm going to plan when I'm going to eat it. I'm going to eat it in the morning, maybe in the afternoon and in the evening. So if I have new knowledge, my behavior will change in some way. So what is your new knowledge, teachers? And then how is your teaching going to change? Let's plan for it. We don't tend to think of it as an evaluation process, but it is the beginning of the evaluation process. In Letters Foundations, the evaluation process begins with the accumulation of the new knowledge and the new skills as we go through and we record them. But then at the end of the training, review those notes and summaries and work with small groups and develop some plan to assist me to take this back into my classroom. The next slide, slide 31, shows an example action plan, which I know is really an outdated kind of old lazy name for this type of a document, but nonetheless it expresses what it is. This is my action, my plan for action, or an I pledge chart. So here's an example of information teachers will leave the training with. What will I continue doing? What I learned, what was the new key knowledge I learned? And then a plan for change. How will I know that I am implementing this new key knowledge, and you can see it's very specific, this example. And then also take it to the next level. How will my student learning change, and how will I know? What will I observe for? How will I assess it? It could be in the form of some evaluation. The Dibbles, for example, on this example here, or other formative assessments that teachers may use. So professional development, slide 32, is ongoing and forever. Okay, it's forever. We are always learning. We are always bringing into our knowledge base new information. And we need support. Teachers need support that is planned. So what is the study plan? How will we revisit this new information and continue to extend our learning? Through the practice of new instructional processes. When we have classroom coaching and mentoring, that model from Reading First that many schools have adopted, step-by-step learning has as its central piece, that beauty of someone in the school on a regular basis supporting teachers to implement the learning from their professional development. Conversation about what we have learned, conversation about what I'm experiencing in my classroom toward collaborative problem solving of the issues that, and challenges that we face often. The fifth evaluation on slide 33, how do we evaluate ultimately? It is through our student learning. That is the double bingo. And when we have a true and complete professional development evaluation, we have looked at the outcomes. You know, the stakeholders want to know what is the outcome of the ongoing professional development. Teachers want to know. Parents, we want to know what the student learning outcomes are. How did my teaching change, and how did my student learning change? Now, Dibbles is a perfect companion to this. That is one fluency measure. It is a simple and efficient assessment that, especially in grades K-3, AIMS-Webb is another assessment then that can provide the oral reading fluency all the way up through eighth grade. Teachers find it's a perfect companion to that final evaluation step, assessing how well my teaching is working, how well I'm implementing my new knowledge. This next slide here is just a very simple result from, if you look at the result of the training column over in the right, there are several outperformed. Granted, this is not a statistically derived, it's a very simple empirically stated slide here. But the several of the schools that have had language essentials for teachers of reading and spelling and then began that support in the classroom have a greater percentage of students who were benchmarked using the Dibbles. So teacher knowledge and student achievement here, slide 35. We have several studies. The Spear, Swirling, and Brucker have contributed greatly, not just this one study, but several, to our understanding that when teachers understand at a deeper level the structure of language, their students do outperform students from classrooms where teachers do not have this knowledge. So this is a very well-documented and supported content basis for the professional development that we choose for our teachers. When teachers have a deeper understanding of the how oral language works, that mapped onto how written language works, we have teachers who outperform teachers who are understanding at a deeper level how to teach written language. In the resources at the end of this slide, little slideshow here, there is a reference to this particular study, and do search for others if you are interested in reading some more of this research. Slide 36, the language ingredients references that deeper level of understanding of language that I just spoke about. When we help teachers understand that there is a difference between what we teach and how we teach, we get greater results as well. These are teachers who understand at a deeper level that I have to first understand what it is I need to teach, identify the skills I need to teach, and then I can bring in my resources, my methods, and routines to teach those skills. This sounds really basic, but I encourage you to highlight this particular slide or make some notes next to it, because we take for granted that teachers understand this difference. But teachers are coming from years, those of us who have been teaching for a long time, have come from years of teaching that had its initial focus on how I'm going to teach. Teachers who have wonderful libraries of resources that are full of activities and strategies, but those have become a cover or have a smokescreen for identifying first what it is we need to teach. So in our planning of professional development, and if any of you are also creating professional development, help make this distinction between the skill and how we teach. What this is also a distinction of is a difference between the knowledge of what I need to teach and the method or the pedagogy now of how I'm going to teach it. The next couple slides are resources. The first one is the Guskey book, Evaluation of Professional Development. The last bullet on this slide 37 is an interview with Thomas Guskey, which I found very interesting and supportive of the content of his book. Here are, on slide 38, some professional development options that do have a very strong basis in good, solid research. The Reading Coach by Hasbrook and Denton is a wonderful guide for coaches, for literacy specialists who are working with teachers in their building, for that support piece, that very critical, important piece that assists teachers with really making reality out of what they learn in their professional development. If the reading coach and literacy specialist are attending the professional development along with the teachers, that's very desirable. Then they're both hearing the same information and the support can be stronger. The para reading is a professional development that I wrote, one of the letters modules, and has had wonderful success with the group of educators that is so often overlooked, and that is our paraprofessionals. In Title I schools, 87% of those Title I schools use a paraeducator to assist with teaching reading. So giving them the knowledge and the tools to assist with that can be very beneficial. And we know from lots of research, including some of my own, that this group can get very good results when they are trained and given a system. Moving to slide 39, here is the Spear-Swerling reference. And I encourage you to, although those of you who are listening in today, I'm sure, are aware of both Step-by-Step Learning and the Institute for Learning and Literacy as very supportive organizations of education, professional development, and assisting schools. So last slide, go forth and plan exceptional professional development. Do review those five evaluation levels. Identify how you are using those and applying those in the professional development that you provide. And if you have any further questions that are not addressed here in our chat, feel free to send me an email, and I would love to have a discussion with you. So thank you, and I'm a few minutes before 11. My time is 11:41, but I will open it up to questions now.
Yeah, Deb, before we open up to questions, I just wanted to say a few things. This conference call, like all others, is being recorded and will be available in the library section of our website at the Institute for Literacy and Learning for you and your colleagues' future listening pleasure. So here's another piece of very inexpensive professional development that you could pass along.
Thank you, Mike. Very true. We're talking about professional development and the many guises which it has taken on, and there are this particular live chat is one of many technology-related and driven professional development options that are available for administrators and teachers.
Yeah, and they're all out on our website in the library section. And I wanted to call to your attention that in the next few days, I want you to check your email inbox for the next Straight Talk live chat conference call with Dr. Patricia Mathis, a colleague of Deb's. And she's going to be speaking on December 15th at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on taking effective intervention to scale. Now, let me take the phone off mute and so that we can hear some questions, and I'll open it up for questions in the audience.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
Would anyone like to ask Deb a question? If nobody can think of one, let me thank you for participating today from all over the world, literally. And remember that December 15th is your next live chat, and the call is being recorded, so feel comfortable to direct your colleagues to the Institute for Literacy and Learning's library for those past live chats with people like Sharon Vaughn and Joe Torgerson, et cetera. I want you all to have a happy Thanksgiving holiday, and we'll hear from you next on December 15th at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Thank you for joining the Institute Straight Talk live chat today. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.